Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray, a poet on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, if you find tonight's show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance, check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And tonight, my regular co-host is not with me. I'm guessing he's sleeping all drugged up on tryptophan or something like that after enjoying a good Thanksgiving with family. And so I have the wonderful, lovely, and absolutely sparkling Faziana with me. Hello, Fazy. How's it going?
Hello, Pam. Apparently I'm sparkling. That sounds nice.
Yeah, well, I had to think of a third word at the last second, and that's the one that popped into my head.
It's all right. I'm picturing myself all glittery and glam. We'll pretend that's what I look like right now.
Yes, there you go. There you go. Absolutely. Well, I'm very grateful for you to be here. Thank you so much. You know, normally I actually tend to call Rex about like 6 or more times to make sure he's like awake and answering the phone before I turn to somebody else. But, you know, I knew he had a really busy week getting his yard and his house ready for family. I thought, you know, and we all know how it is with the eating the turkey with the tryptophan and the large Thanksgiving meal. I mean, Yeah, I only tried to call him twice, and I thought, you know what, especially if he still has company there and they're sleeping over, I didn't
yeah.
want to keep ringing the phone over and over again, you know. So I figured, well, and he can get some much-needed rest and or enjoy his company, whichever he's doing, and absolutely, but we have a great lineup of poetry tonight, a nice full board. We've got several carryovers from the what I ran a contest called A Fish Out of Water, and it had a few different quotes to do with the phrase A Fish Out of Water, and also the artwork of Ellen Marcus, which is really cool because she does paintings of like cartoonish looking animals in various like situations where you don't expect animals to be in. Like one of her most famous things she does is she does paintings of animals riding bicycles. But what I did is I only focused on her artwork of fish. And so it's a combination of fish in, you know, like one in a boat, one on a bicycle. But she also has artwork of fish that it's like you would, if you look at them, you'll recognize them as being classical. Like I don't want to say, I don't know if parody is the right word, but you know what I mean? Like somebody would take a classical painting and they put a cat in it or something like that instead.
I think parody works well. It's like the written
yeah.
version or the visual version of a parody, whereas
usually
parody is a song.
But yes, it is a visual parody version of a parody. It takes classic art and paints it with the idea of the fish as the Mona Lisa or the girl in the pearl earring and et cetera. And so we've got some carryovers from that, and then we will have some rights from our my absurdity contest. So with that being said, and we do have a caller. Let's see who we have here. Hello, area code 418. You're on the air. Who are we speaking to, please?
My gracious,
Hannah,
I asked the phone back. I phoned on my number.
Okay. No problem.
I'll phone back.
All right. Well, while we wait for Naomi to call in, I'll go ahead and, I'll go ahead and get the first poem up, which apparently I thought I had copied in the link, but I did not. All right, so here we go. And this is No Longer by Hall of Poetry, and we have a recording for this, so here we go.
No Longer. Since I became aware of who I am, no longer falling for the limiting belief scam, I find myself floundering like a fish out of water, no longer comfortable with the devil or his daughter. Lunching with the girls, having a bitch, no longer leaves me cackling like Winnie the Witch. It leaves me cold, searching for a new pond, no longer willing to do anything but let the heart respond. Working at a job that brings little joy, no longer willing to accept monotony just to be employed. I aspire to help, to teach, to share, no longer afraid to tread where angels stare. I guess I don't need to conform or fit in to be free, no longer concerned about the idea of who I should be. I pull on my big girl pants, or when they fit, no longer listening to the matron of doubt. Yes, I can do it. End poem. Sam Hall, Hall of Poetry.
Great read and write, Hall of Poetry. Thank you for the recording. It is much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, Then the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Afasiana, your thoughts on this, right?
Well, I really loved that she had the audio, especially when she says, "Oh, and they fit." She had such sass there. I loved it. those pants, those big girl pants do fit. I really liked this, how it talks about how you change. Suddenly sitting around, you know, gossiping doesn't feel fulfilling anymore. Something isn't quite sitting right. Doing a job that's just monotony isn't good enough. And sometimes you just want to be inspired, to feel like you're making a difference, to do what you're passionate about. And that sounds like this is what's happening here. She's deciding, like, I'm going to do something more with my life, and I'm going to not follow the map that's laid out before me. I'm going to just, you know, follow my heart or my instincts and see where it goes. But that line, I pull out my big group of pants, and oh, they fit. I liked it when it was written, but her saying it just, like, gave it that extra oomph. So now that's my favorite.
It really did, didn't it? I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And welcome back, Naomi. And what did you think of Hall of Poetry's poem?
Oh, yeah, I really liked it. First off, I'm not on my 418 number anymore, eh? Right?
Nope, you're on 111.
Oh, okay. Good. Okay, just checking, you know. I don't want a big, long phone bill coming in. Okay. Yeah, I really liked this, you know, since I became aware of who I am. I think those are magical words in your life because, you know, some people take a long, long time before they come into the knowing what they really want, what they really are, just knowing yourself. And I really liked that, you know, that she focused on that. Really inspiring right, I find, you know, an uplifting right, a right to say, hey, go get it, you know, believe in yourself and go out there and strut your thing and you know, like she says, put on your big girl pants and, you know, go get what you want. I liked, you know, no longer comfortable with devil or his daughter. And I like no longer leaves me crackling like Winnie the Witch. I like the references there. And, yeah, you know, just a wonderful write on just, you know, not like Afasiana said, not following that beaten path or, you know, the just staying in that job that you don't really like, just daring to go out there, have the courage to find something new and be happier in your life and be more true to yourself. So wonderful, right?
It really is. And yes, it's a great write on self-awareness and really having that uplifting attitude of believing in yourself. I mean, great rhyme, amazing imagery and metaphors, an excellent write on casting doubt aside to find your full potential. And I, too, really liked the attitude, and I pull on my big girl pants at, oh, and they fit, no, and they fit. And I also, another line I really liked was, working at a job brings little joy, no longer willing to accept monotony just to be employed. I like that part because, you know, it brings up the thought of, you know, making that decision to find something that gives you a sense of fulfillment. Wonderful lines and very well done. And let's see what we have next. We have Slap on Deck by Peter Solway. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay, yeah, for Peter. Do slap on deck. Doomed fish for captain, sea suck bones, widow smiling, smooth sailing, muse on love making. A state of nautical husband, maritime museums to open, a retired captain's income, art of continual inheritance. Choking on barbiturates, love always loaded, death a one-way ticket, oh, to see St. Paul's on the way down, Vatican if Catholic, lots of tits if Hindi ecstatic, hell, it's final say of Marxist atheist second course, a wetten virus. End poem.
Great read and write there. I mean, I'm sorry, not write. I mean, great read there, Naomi. And great write by Peter, who always has thought-provoking lines and the most creative imagery and metaphors and takes a different prompt. When I read this poem, I couldn't help but envision the idea of a goldfish being flushed down the toilet. So I told him that this was, to me, an intriguing write on life flushed down the toilet. And I really liked this all the way through with its thought-provoking line, but especially a state of nautical husband, maritime museums to open, a retired captain's income, art of continual inheritance. I don't know, just I guess all the way through this kind of speaks to me on how messed up life can be with, you know, this idea of how things just don't work out necessarily how we think it's going to. So great write and very well done. And Faisy, your thoughts?
Peter's always really interesting, and this is no exception. Interesting how he goes through like various religions, and when he says Wuhan virus, I'm not totally sure what the Wuhan is referencing, but Wuhan virus, I think, with an H, and was COVID-19's kind of nickname for where there was rumors it could have been started, I think. But Wuhan, I'm pretty sure that's referencing someone else, and I can't quite place it. I think it's a person who he's talking about. So he's kind of playing on it sounds like the Wuhan, but Wuhan connecting it to someone else. But it's bugging me because I can't remember who that is. When he says doomed fish for, I thought it was going to be captain's feast, but it's not actually. If you look at it, it's captain's feast. It's not spelt like captain. And Peter is very intentional in his writing. I've never seen him make typos that are actually a typo. So I would guess that caption instead of captain is telling us something. Do I know what it is? No. I confess, Peter, you have me baffled again. But that's something, I'm sure of it. So I always have a hard time commenting on Peter because it takes me a while to have to look up his references. I'm not going to lie. So well done, but challenging.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And great observations there, especially on his wordplay. Very cool. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, this made me think of, you know, a black widow, you know, a sailor, a fisherman's wife, you know, that her husband died at sea or something, and she inherited all his fortune. Like doomed fish for captain's feast, stuck bones, widow smiling, smooth sailing muse on lovemaking. That's what I thought of. I could be way, way off because, you know, like Ephesiana said, you know, Peter's writing, sometimes you have to read it a couple of times. But, he has strong, strong, you know, words in here that, you know, that is really, really like you said, Pam, that life is really twisted and all, you know, if you can say that, I guess you can at this hour. Like life is really like all fucked up, choking on those barbiturates, and you know, death a one way ticket. And everybody dies anyway in the end, and and you have all these, you know, the Vatican if you're Catholic, if you're Hindi, you have another other thing. If you're Marxist, you have the other thing. So, playing with the words and so showing how life is all twisted. So very well done, Peter.
Absolutely. Great comment, Naomi. All right. And up next we have The Death of a Van by Time Teller. Why is it all fucked up human beings use the excuse we were humbling you, removing the naivety, or simply giving you a life of hard knocks, when in fact they went out of their way to make you a fish out of water? In doing so, they settle grudges and old scores like an oversensitive whore whose hole between their legs has worn sore with their hateful interference. Well, never mind. Smile, why don't you? 'Cause when a fish travels in the sky, it develops wings and soars above the waves. When a fish walks on land, it grows legs and arms and that most useful of things, a reversible thumb. And all those other animals in the sea that formed cultures and groups all of their own who saw fit to play dungeon master or god and dish out your lessons, well, we feel sorry for them, really, don't we? All their finery and their fake smiles with their fake positivity and their fake justifications for doing hateful verbs. Pity you, don't we? But that won't stop you, will it? After all, grudges are grudges. End poem. And Naomi, your thoughts on this poem?
Am I off mute? Am I off mute? Yes, I am.
Yeah, I am.
Woo-hoo. Oh, my gracious. I really like this. You know, it's strong. It's powerful. It's like no, give me no bullshit kind of poem. You know, why is it all fucked up? Human beings use the excuse we were humbling you, removing the naivety, or simply giving you a lie of hard knocks. So, you know, the way people, they go out of their way sometimes to be manipulative with you, and you see that, you know, with their fake positivity, their fake smiles, their fake justifications. And I like, you know, how he finishes off, pity you don't we, but that won't stop you, will it. After all, grudges are grudges. So, you know, great write and very powerful write by Time Teller.
It definitely was a powerful write, I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Ephesiana, your thoughts?
This strikes me hard because I spent today at a reserve, an Indian band reserve close to where I live, and we were talking about how the schools that took the indigenous children were used, and it was said at first, it was like, this is to make you strong, to make you, you know, civilized. And so that reminds me of this one of saying, we were humbling you, we were moving your naivete, we were preparing you for hard knocks. But when actually they were trying to make you a fish out of water, they were trying to take you away from your culture. And just that whole first stanza just really matches with the things that I was learning about today. And then the second stanza kind of speaks to evolution. The fish walking there, and when it comes out of the water, it grows legs and arms and a reversible thumb, so it becomes the person. And that being able to adjust when you're taken out of your water and still thriving. So it's like being able to get past that mistreatment and yet be powerful in your own way. Just that being against the fakeness. I like that. And I like the wording of for doing hateful verbs, to, like, instead of saying their actions, choosing the word verbs there, I thought that was kind of fun because I don't see it used in that way very often. So this was powerful in terms of its message, but it also was very playful in its delivery, and I think that makes it an accessible thing. Sometimes you have to make a little light about something really serious because that's how you can reach people.
That is so true. Humor can really help to reach people. And I really like what you had to say about how what you learned today relates to that first stanza. Because I can definitely see that. So great observations there. And Naomi, you did a wonderful read of this. Your thoughts. Right? Did you read this, Naomi? I think so.
Yeah, no. Didn't I comment already?
Did you? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, so it must be my turn. Oh,
yes,
okay.
You read it, Pam.
I read it. Wow, you'd think I'd recognize my own beautiful voice, but apparently not. All right, well. I did think this was an amazing write, and I thought it had brilliant imagery and metaphors and thoughtful, hard-hitting lines on the journey we walk, manipulated by the hand of fate, and also manipulated by those who do what, as you both mentioned, manipulate for what they think is a greater purpose. And I really did like that first stanza all the way through. And I, too, like the phrase hateful verbs being an action. And the idea there are those people who will continue to try to manipulate. And they're not doing it for anyone's good other than their own. So wonderful lines and very well done. All right. And up next, we have a first recital by S. Sharp. And Afasiana, would you go ahead and give that a read for us, please?
A first recital by S. Sharp. The horsehair bobs dancing along the bridge, skipping across the strings like a rock across a lake. The crowd's murmur sinks. A fish jumps out of the sea, glistening crescendo, floundering upon the stage, rising and falling faster, faster. Splash! She dives into the dark sea. Silence. Applause. End poem.
Great read, Faisie. And what a wonderful write by Scott Sharp. And Naomi, your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing wordplay in this. The metaphors and the imagery are just amazing. A fish jumps out of the sea, glistening crescendo, floundering upon the stage, rising and falling faster, faster. Splash, she dives into the dark sea. Silence. Applause. I can't stop, but try to the first thing that came to my mind when Tasiana was reading this was the fleeting of life and how it passes fast. I don't know if he meant it that way, but you know, poetry speaks to people in different ways. But you know, just how sometimes the life passes just as a show. You know, it passes so fast. You just have time to get on that stage, do your little dance, and do your little splash, and then you're dead, you know. So the brevity of life, that's what crossed my mind. Maybe, you know, far-fetching, but, you know, that's what I got. But amazing, right?
I like that. Very cool. I think that's a really great observation on the potential in the poem. And Afasiana, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
But I like what Naomi just said. I was thinking it was like your 15 minutes of fame, like you only are in the spotlight for a couple seconds, but I like hers better of you're only alive for a short time and you got to do what you can before you dive into that water again. So it's like in the beginning, it's sort of like the whatever happens before you're born, and then there's that brief time where you're on the earth, and then you're back into like the beyond, the underworld, different kind of plane of existence. It's really cool, and this is a fun way of talking about it. I like how he uses spacing, because there's like the big break before splash and after splash, which makes me think like the crowd kind of goes silent, that as they wait for the fish to hit the water and there's that big splash, and then there's another big break and the silence, and then they realize like it's not coming up. Sometimes you're waiting for that second act, that next little note of the song, and so there's that silence, but nothing happens. So then they applaud, and that they realize, like, this is the end. I really liked the way that the spacing made me think about things like that.
That is really cool. Yeah, I too like the spacing. And I really like what you both had to say, because I could also see this being about that 15 minutes of fame that we all seek. I just thought this had such amazing imagery and a wonderful sense of movement that really brings this brevity to life. I really like the use of the word murmur. The crowd's murmur sinks. A fish jumps out of the sea, glistening crescendo, floundering upon the stage, rising and falling faster and faster. I really like how floundering upon the stage really speaks on the struggles of life. You know, just a wonderful write and very well done. And let's see, up next we have your poem, Naomi. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay, so this is called Pedaling. Racing towards the vast unknown, pedal to pedal to pedal. Bicycle wheel spinning, rubber burning, tired bouquet of wilted roses and handlebar. Thorn pricks fingers, a reminder of life's sting. Pretty pinks and purples fade into the horizon as black tar asphalt stretches into winding roads, a fast-speeding highway where our shadows lurk in bushes and jump out, where roadkill whispers secrets of lives unlived. Where red velvet petals drip, a tender mourning for dreams lost and paths left unchosen. As amidst the chaos, we search for a place, a sanctuary where we belong, finding ourselves swimming in gravel, suffocating under dust and dirt in a world that never seems to align. Yet we persist, embracing grit and grime, weaving through a tapestry of chance and fate, trying to leave footprints on a never-changing shore, pedaling, pedaling onward to the cadence of our restless hearts, twisting, turning, pushing, sweating, up hills, speeding, sailing, down hills, trying to embrace the wild ride as we search for our own quiet place where we can stop, stand still, and slowly breathe a while. End poem.
Wonderful read and write, Naomi. I'm very glad that you were inspired. And Faisie, your thoughts?
I like how the time of day is established through the changing colors of the sky. I don't think it actually says, like, it's nighttime, it's sunset, it's nighttime. It's just the colors give us a timeline. So you're doing the show, don't tell kind of thing that we're always encouraged to do. I really like the line where roadkill whispers secrets of lives unlived. That is an intense line. It's whimsical but very serious at the same time. It's eerie. I really enjoy that. And then with the petals dripping, a tender morning. I like the use of morning there because, on the one hand, you could ride your bike at sunrise in the morning, but this is spelt with the U, so it's about mourning, as in the sadness of those lives that were unlived, the choices that you didn't make. But it feels like mourning can be kind of a wordplay there, and I like that. Where is it now? There was another thing I want to talk about. Oh, the footprints. Trying to leave footprints on an ever-changing shore. You know, you're trying to leave your mark in the world, and the water keeps coming up and erasing what you did, and it's so frustrating because it changes, and what you tried to leave as a legacy is not secure. You have to think about where you're stepping and be intentional in finding a way to get around that changing shoreline, moving forward despite it all. I thought that was a really great metaphor.
You are Faisie, Anna.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment, Faisie. I love the imagery and metaphors in this, and all the way through, and like Faisie said, it's both a balance of seriousness and whimsicality. And because of that, and because of the imagery and metaphors and the message within, I gave it the silver. I really like how, to me, this speaks on how we have to move forward, but at the same time, remember the past as we go on the many twists and turns of life. I really like where it says, the stanza that starts with pretty pinks and purples fade into the horizon as black tar asphalt stretches into the winding road. And the line where it says, where roadkill whispers secrets of lives unlived. I really enjoyed, the idea of using roadkill as those dreams that get crushed. And then other lines I thought were great were, yet we persist embracing grit and grime, weaving through a tapestry of chance and fate. You know, and that's what the thing is, you know, we have to take those chances through the difficult times of life. You know, we have to be willing to push on and push ahead and take those chances. And that's the wonderful thing about being that fish out of water, someone who's willing, you know, to take chances. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And was there anything you wanted to say about your poem, Naomi?
No, not really. I just thank you for the such an inspiring, art. Thank you, Pam, because it really, it really flashed into my head when, as soon as I saw the fish, I thought of that right away. You know, those petals, those petals. So, thank you.
Absolutely, my pleasure. And up next, we have Gurgles and Giggles by Liquid Mind Forever. And it goes like this. She didn't know what she didn't know, and she didn't know she had gills and could swim the shallows, marshmallows, and saw grass past the potatoes as a pathos seemed fallow on one's way to greater tallow, however hollow the sallow fellows. It's a scaly daily ritual, falling off the line of scrimmage, cribbage, still plays the odds with scrod and pods of schooling pools of lineage. Stink bait ate to sate, while each late arrival found a baited mate into state, no probate, and that instigates the magistrate to mitigate. Bait and tackle run afield with sun shield, seal to reel in the spiel, heel to toe, she's in the know, somewhere below, sea level, disheveled, and full of rusty nails to sail through the carps, finds sharp a tadpole's eel on wheels of a rubber ducky stuck on 30-gauge monofilament-based metaled. So dig in and smell the cheese, cough and wheeze as you sneeze when you please, ease on down till the bobber bops and a dragonfly drops, then spread your fins, grin, and bite the dough bait. It now and again, no debt depends on self-control as you extol your roll call and fall back to chumming on the rocks. End poem. And what an amazing write by Liquid Mind Forever. And Naomi, your thoughts. Off mute, Naomi? Oh, she said be right back. Okay, Kat, got it. All right. Well, Faizy, your thoughts?
I liked saw the grass past the potatoes. I think that's cute. And the bait and tackle run afield with sun. So tackle as in the tackle you use when you're fishing, but tackle also is like a football rugby kind of move that you do in contact sports. So the tackle run afield makes me think that it kind of has like a wordplay thing where she's playing on both kinds of tackle, perhaps. I could be reading too much into that, but that's how I'm taking it. Dig in and smell the cheese. Seems like something that I should just say all the time because I love cheese and that sounds like a funny thing to say. So I'm just going to say that from now on. Smell the cheese. I enjoyed it.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. That is too funny. Well, I have to tell you, I don't think you use it in the same way in Canada, but around here we used to as kids say smell the cheese when we would let off a particularly stinky fart. So, you know.
Okay. I've never used that, but perhaps I'm just, you know, out of the loop in the fart lingo.
yeah. Well, you know, you have to be, a redneck like me or something. I don't know. You have to be from this area, I guess. I personally have to say I never did it. I was never one to want to draw attention to my gaseous products going on. But, you know, there definitely was plenty of teenage boys who did. And but great comment there, Faizy. And I too really liked her wordplay. You know, with the, you mentioned the potato line, and you know, I really liked where she also, she says it's a scaly daily ritual, falling off the line of scrimmage, cribbage, still plays the odds with scrot and pods of schooling pools of lineage. You know, amazing imagery and metaphors, really an excellent write on digging deep and realizing your full potential. And there's definitely lines in here, especially with, she mentions lineage and tadpoles, and, you know, that makes me think of, you know, like thinking about the kind of family, the kind of environment you're raised in, and then finding your own way, finding your ability to get out of that environment. So amazing, right? And very well done. And Naomi, are you back with us? All right. I'm going to guess, nope, not quite yet. So I'll go ahead and grab the next poem. And let's see here. Do-do-do-do-do. All right. Up next, I'm going to put a poem by Postwoman, and it is called Index of Fisherty. And Naomi, not Naomi, sorry, Faizy, would you go ahead and give that a read for us, please?
Yes. Index of Fisherty by Postwoman. Let's meet by candlelight and settle the cutlery on the dining table. A little out of habit and a little out of instinct, and enjoy a tiny table tennis match of quiet and dark with backhanded touches of stainless steel. Later, I can think of editing What Is Becoming, a poem by removing the extra portions of flour and breadcrumbs, but right now it's time to cut into the fish and put a boneless slice into our mouths and chew. Chew the whole evening, too. The watery roofs of houses, their salmon walls, their fishbone inhabitants, and go on eating till there's only two of us below sea level in dusky waves and weeds after civilization has ceased to exist, even in the ocean of minds. Here only a tapeworm of light dances and mourns the memory of everything, a tabula rasa of ferns ferment. But we're done chewing. My ulna hugs your humerus. Soft light eats up both. Like East Indian recipes, drops a tissue of shadow, burps, and we fold into a fossil hug. End poem.
Great read of Faziana, and what a wonderful write by Postwoman. I really enjoyed and appreciated the creativity in this. Brilliant imagery and metaphors. I like how it speaks on spending time together, embracing the shadows of memory while digging into the flesh of thoughts shared. I really like that line, my ulna hugs your humerus, soft light eats up both like East Indian recipes. And you know, life offers up so much to indulge in and enjoy. And I like how she offers that up in the idea of sharing a meal together. I wasn't really sure fisherdry was a word or if it was a play on words, because I know husbandry is a word having to do with the raising of animals and the, you know, what would you call that? The breeding of animals. So I thought, well, you know, maybe that's a word. But I tried looking it up and I couldn't quite find it. But either way, it's clever, whether it's actual word and she used it or whether it's something she thought of on a play on words for the phrase husbandry. And I really also like, later I can think of editing What Is Becoming a poem by removing the extra portions of flour and breadcrumbs, but right now it's time to cut into the fish and put a boneless slice into our mouths and chew. You know, like right now we need to focus on the moment, and later I will be taking away those unnecessary portions of a poem. Wonderful lines and very well done. And Naomi, did you get a chance to read that poem? Naomi?
Am I on mute? No, I'm not. I'm off mute now, right? Yeah. My gracious. Oh, I really liked this. Oh, my gracious. This is a fabulous, right? I love, you know, how she, the way she just, it's straightforward, yet it's so, I don't know, it just, you know, it sucks you in, this poem. Let's meet by moonlight and settle the cutlery on the dining table. Right there, my gracious, you know. It's not let's meet by moonlight and then have a candlelit dinner and sip wine. No, let's settle the cutlery on the dining table. A little out of habit, a little out of instinct. I enjoy a tiny table tennis match of quiet and dark with backhand touches of stainless steel. That is just amazing. And, just the way she addresses the whole idea of I don't know, conversation or, you know, going down memory lane or, just having conversation with somebody, getting to know somebody or, you know, just the way she weaves it all together is just, it is just amazing. It's time to cut into the fish and put a boneless slice into our mouths. You save the extra stuff for later, but right now let's get into the subject here, you know, and leave all the rest for later. Just amazing the lines. I could, you know, recite the whole thing. It's just such an amazing, right? Uniquely creative and just wow. That's all I have. That's I finish with the word wow.
It is a great word to end on. Absolutely works out very well. Great comment. And Faith, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
When it's doing the part at the candlelit table, I took it in two possible ways, and I wasn't sure if either one of them was anywhere close to what it should be. So on the one hand, it seems like it might actually be, like, sensual. It's like we're going to, like, throw down on the table and have some fun. But on the other hand, it seemed like a battle of wits. Those backhand touches of stainless steel, that's like a backhand comment. It's like that it's a game of arguments, and stainless steel is used in swords as well, but in this case it's the cutlery where you're metaphorically cutting people apart as you have dinner and have, like, biting conversation, which I can picture sometimes, you know, holiday meals, if families don't get along, then there's, like, a game of chess in the speaking of things as people meet. So that stanza, I think, could have been something about, like, there being something under the surface, and whether it was an attraction thing or an animosity. I feel like there's a layer to their interaction that is not overtly said. Although when it goes to boneless slice, I'm thinking it's the second one. There's my 12-year-old humor. The tapeworm surprised me because I mean, it makes sense because it's like a food thing, but, like, when you think of, like, a light, that, like, beam of light, tapeworm is not what I go for, because tapeworms kill you slowly from the inside. They take all of your nutrients and basically you're starving to death even though you're eating, like you're gluttonous because you can't get what you need. So I'm sure that tapeworm has a lot of significance in its dancing and mourning, but I'm not sure if I'm awake enough to process what that actually is talking about. I feel like I got to dig in deeper with that, but the tapeworm should be a key moment that my brain's just not up to right now.
You know what? We have to agree with you, and I'm not really sure either, other than perhaps it's because it is in the same stanza as memory of everything, that it has to do with those memories we become so obsessed with. But I really liked your observations, how it could be on like the battle of wits, or, you know, there could be a certain sensuality to it, which made me think of a Shakespeare's, what is that, something, a big to do about nothing or something like that. I'm forgetting what it is, but
much
you know
ado about
what
nothing.
Much ado, yes, thank you. Ugh. I hate when things get twisted, but yeah, exactly. But I thought that was a wonderful comment there. Very cool. And let's see what we have next. Well, we are going to be going into the Rights from My Absurdity contest, which was art. Absurd art or quotes that had to do with the philosophy of absurdism, you know, just the in general, the absurdity of life. And so with that being said, we have Brief Encounter by Chromatic Prayer. And Naomi, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, getting off mute. Yes. Okay, where is it? Oh, I have to refresh my page. Okay, I got it. Okay, Brief Encounter. While walking in the street, absurdity, that's starting well. While walking in the street, absurdity hits me in the face. I step back, shake my head, and take a clear, good look before punching back with my full force. Blood splatters and teeth flies. I and absurdity are rolling on the ground, wrestling with each other like a man wrestles with his soul. I pull absurdity's hair, and absurdity tries to stab my eyes with fingers. In absolute anger, I headbutt absurdity, and absurdity relaxes its grasp on my collar momentarily. I hurry up and jump back, and all I can see is the clear sight of an empty street. Not a car, not a man, not a woman, not a child, not a cat, not a dog, not a rat, not a rabbit, not a monkey. Nothing. I straighten up and set my shirt right before continuing on my journey. Yes, it is absurd. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. And he wrote to the prompt, the quote, at any street corner, the feeling of absurdity can hit any man in the face. And I really liked his take on the prompt, how he made it into a literal fight. And you know, this makes me think of, like, you know, when you're walking along the street, you know, talking to yourself and suddenly realize, you know, people are looking at you, or, you know, or you start thinking, maybe they're not really looking, but you start thinking, you know, was somebody looking at me, while I was mumbling to myself? But this is another one with a great sense of movement to it. I really like in absolute anger, I headbutt absurdity, and absurdity relaxes its grasp on my collar momentarily. And I like headbutt absurdity because it makes me think of how, and to me this is not just, it's a metaphorical fight that works on the idea to me of how we want life to have meaning. We want there to be a purpose with everything that happens. And so when the absurdity of life, we're confronted with it, we fight against that notion because of the idea that we need to feel like there's some purpose in everything that we go through. So I thought this was a wonderful write that is philosophical and humorous at the same time. So very well done. And Faizy, your thoughts?
This reminded me a lot of the movie Fight Club. I think it works really well as the person fighting himself, and he even says at one point, like a man wrestles with his soul, and I think that's what's happening here is wrestling with your own soul. When it says, I headbutt absurdity and absurdity relaxes its grasp, I kind of think this is a fight between, like, the head and the heart, what your logic says compared to what your kind of gut feeling and your emotional response to things are. And sometimes your mind might think what your heart wants is absurd. You know, your heart wants you to run away with someone or go on an adventure or, like, you know, it has terrible taste in attraction. And the head's going, you're crazy. Like, what are you even thinking about? And it's that battle between the different parts of you. So when I hear headbutt, I'm imagining the brain's like, you dummy, and going after the other organs. And then to realize that, like, there's nothing there. It's just you. You got to calm down because you've gotten all worked up. And you're talking about, like, walking, mumbling to yourself. You know, I'll tend to, like, practice conversations in my head if I'm nervous about talking to someone. And I'm, like, going back and forth between, like, what they're probably going to say and what I would say. Or, after a conversation, I'm trying to figure out, like, what I could have done differently. And I'm always afraid that at some point I'm saying this out loud. And I'm like, can people tell? Even if I'm not saying it, I'm, like, making the faces of, like, being mad or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I should stop thinking about this.
I get that, because I do the exact same thing. I'll make the faces, and, yeah, I wonder, you know, do people notice that? But, yeah, great comment there, and great observation. And, Naomi, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I like the pace of it, you know, like you said, I think you mentioned that, Pam, the pace of it, you know, the blood that splatters, the teeth that flies, you know, the way they're rolling on the ground. And but I also like, you know, how he when he mentions, you know, not a car, not a man, okay, that can be, not a woman, okay, not a child, okay, not a cat, not a dog, okay. Not a rat, oh, that's starting to be absurd. Not a rabbit, that's even more absurd. Not a monkey, well, then now he's starting to go off the rough edge of absurdity again. So, you know, it shows us, you know, how absurdity can, you know, I really liked what Faiziana had to say about the headbutt or what, butthead or what was it? The headbutt. I had it backwards. Oh, my gracious. The headbutt, you know, because, yeah, everything goes on, like Afasiana said, everything goes on inside your brain, you know, and you can go absurd there, the absurdity. The absurdity exists inside of each and every one of us, you know, and inside of our brain, the way you think sometimes, oh, my gracious. But, yeah, so great, great poem, you know, very thought-provoking, I thought, and, you know, it really made me stop and think that, yeah, I am absurd at times, you know, crazy thoughts, you know. So, great write.
Oh, absolutely. And I like how you brought that one stanza that kept saying, not of this and not of that, and how the lines just kept getting more and more absurd. So wonderful comment there. And up next, we have Magic of Life by Chess93. And it goes like this. In the realm of ideas where absurdity takes flight, Einstein's wisdom guides us through the night. If at first it's not absurd, he boldly proclaimed, then there's no hope, he wisely exclaimed. Like a cow on roller skates or a fish that climbs a tree, absurdity's canvas is where the mind runs free. It's a giraffe in a top hat sipping tea with glee, or a penguin on a surfboard riding waves of the sea. We chase rainbows in the desert seeking pots of gold, while chasing shadows in the daylight our tales are told. Like a dog with a saxophone howling at the moon, in the theater of absurdity we dance to our own tune. With metaphors as colorful as a parrot's plume, we dive into the rabbit hole chasing wonder and gloom. Like a pineapple in a library, a fruit one of place, absurdity's playground is where ideas embrace. Idioms and sarcasm are tool in hand. Like a fish out of water, we'll surely understand the absurdity of life, its twists and turns, as we navigate this world where the absurdity burns. So let's embrace the chaos. Let's take the leap into a world of nonsense where secrets we'll keep. For in the land of absurdity, where reason is bent, lies the magic of life, its true testament. End poem. And I have to say, this was a write that absolutely gave me a great big smile. I enjoyed this one. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it is through the absurdity of life that you get rich ideas, and you get you do the craziest things that sometimes are bring you the most wonderful memories, you know. Life doesn't always have to be clean cut and well thought out and planned ahead of time. Why not be absurd sometimes, you know? I like where he says, we chase rainbows in the desert seeking pots of gold, while chasing shadows in the daylight our tales are told, like a dog with a saxophone howling at the moon. In the theater of absurdity, we dance to our own tune. And, and then the line, absurdity's playground is where ideas embrace. Yeah, you know, sometimes you get your best ideas, you out of just being a little bit crazy upstairs. So great, right?
yep, for sure. Wonderful comment. And Daisy, your thoughts?
I'm pretty sure a lot of the stuff near the beginning are references to famous paintings, because I recognize the images of, like, a giraffe in a top hat sipping tea. I'm sure I've seen that. And the penguin on the surfboard. And, like, I think, And I haven't actually gone through all your content. Are there paintings like that as prompts?
Not that I know of. However, there is, I believe, Dolly painted paintings with giraffes in it. So I could see that. That has a very Dollyism type imagery to it.
It does. You're right. So I think it might be referencing some of that. I mean, they're all good examples of the absurd, but I think there might be, allusion to things. Could be wrong, but I swear I've seen a giraffe in a top hat. but you know what? I look at a lot of picture books for kids. It is entirely possible. I'm thinking of a picture book where it was happening, but still. I like the whimsy of this. It's so colorful and fun, and pineapple in the library is not that out of place. I have seen weirder things, I'll tell you that. And also, a pineapple is a key word. You have a pineapple beside you, it means you want to hook up.
Hook up at the library.
Not just at the library, but, you know, would not put it past you, because I've seen it all. That's nothing. So if you find someone with a pineapple at the library, they want to talk to you.
Yeah, I think I'm going to steer clear of the people with pineapples at the library. But great comment there, Phoebe. And, yeah, I think there are some references to, like either literature or art or movies throughout this poem. The penguin on the surfboard, there's actually a cartoon came out, I think 10 years or more ago, called Surf's Up, about a penguin who wanted to learn surfing. So it kind of made me think of that movie, but I liked your observations there, and this was definitely fun. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Didn't I already comment?
Did you? Oh, I'm sorry. Geez, I can't keep track of things. Okay, yes, you did. Sorry about that. But yeah, I loved how, as Paisley said, this is filled with whimsy. The rhyme and flow is great. The imagery is so much fun. And I like how he speaks on the idea of how much fun we can have with the absurdism of life, and even use it in our poetry. Idioms and sarcasm are tools in hand, like a fish out of water will surely understand the absurdity of life, its twists and turns as we navigate this world where the absurdity burns. Wonderful lines and very well done. All right. And up next we have Burlesque at Its Best by Eric Svensson. And Eric was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
Burlesque at Its Best. Prelude. Heightened absurdity dances like spectral sea bamboo. Suffocation in teal maelstrom media tides. Portuguese man-of-war armadas congregate. Insidious tendrils quiver, quake in hurry, scurry, rake. Intermission. Shark tank satire. Leaves no room to maneuver. Titanium bars replace tubular bells. Whistleblower, beluga whales convoy away from catastrophe. Coelacanth depth perhaps the safest hideaway on fault-lined ocean floors. Interval. Caught between shock absorber rocks and unparalleled hard places, unparoled, unpardoned, unicorn extinct, the abasement of reason cries treason. Pause, crescendo of sacred and profane tango, arch, starch, centuries, cackle, heckle, jekyll, and jive, planetary town crier, absurdity, fearless, burlesque at its best, unshackled, never cockled, sometimes sarkless, mostly dressed to the nines, angular, dark humor, fedora pushed back, finest veneer sneers, incidental sniggers, trigger tear canisters, denouement, dislodged from the cross of space and time by absurdity. Denudement drops us down the big blue, spectral sea bamboo, neither pardons nor condemns, just observes the tendency of humans to kill what they love most. Portuguese, man of war, armadas amass regardless. Tendrils quiver, quake in hurry, scurry, wreck, but not retribution. Shark Tank satire, the only sitcom worth watching. No applause permitted. Just deafening silence acceptable.
Great read and write, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Eric wrote to the quote, "Man stands face to face with the irrational. He feels within him his longing for happiness and for reason. The absurd is born of the confrontation between the human need and the unreasonable silence of the world." And that's by Albert Camus. And in fact, a lot of the quotes I had were by Albert Camus, who was a philosopher who really focused on the philosophy of absurdism. He may have even, and I apologize, I should know this more, but he may have even been the inventor of the philosophy of absurdism, but I'm not 100% sure about that. I think that came along before him, but, you know, I apologize. But anyways, and Faizy, your thoughts on this poem?
I liked the line, heckle, jekyll, and jive. For like Jekyll and Hyde, he played with that really nicely. And then I like the use of the Portuguese man of war, because he makes it sound like it's human wars. The armadas are amassing and it's, you know, it's going to be the fight there. But he's talking about the animal. But it's smart to use an animal with that name. So he's been going through the other water creatures earlier in this. He talks about the various animals, the belugas and the sharks and whatnot. And again, he's using it really great to talk about human stuff, but he's using the animal that has the Portuguese man of war name. And they are some really absurd looking creatures. If you don't know what a Portuguese man of war is, look it up. It's like a, I don't even know how to say it. It's related to a jellyfish, I would say, but it's very oddly shaped, really a cool looking thing. But if there was going to be a creature I called absurd, that would be one of them. It looks like something out of a dream or a fantasy thing. So I really like that he included that in this particular piece. And that line that he says right before that is really depressing because it's true. Just observe the tendency of humans to kill what they love the most, because we will overhunt something that we really like to eat, or like think about like the buffalo and how that everyone wanted the hides and also the meat, and because it was, you know, well sought after, it was basically gone, completely destroyed in overhunting. And there's plants that have basically gone extinct because we pick them all. Fish that we overfish. When you try to capture things, you end up killing them. Like the whole reason there's that, like, if you love something, set it free, is probably partly, I mean, I know it's a metaphor for, like, people, but also think about, like, when people have tried to have, like, birds as pets and insects that little kids collect, and they tend to die unless you're really well prepared, which often they aren't. And that's such a sad line, because I think it's true. When we think about, like, lakes, we love to be along lakes. We like to live beside the beach. But when there are a ton of humans in that lake, on their boats and in their various things, and everyone's around the lake, it ends up getting polluted and the beaches become gross, and it's like we ruin what we love the most because we'd mistreat it. I think that's a very powerful line.
Oh, I have to agree with you. And wonderful comment there. And I was looking at that Portuguese Man of War. I've never actually seen a picture of one before. And oh, my goodness, they really are a very surreal-looking creature. How cool is that? And, yeah, the ocean is just filled with some just amazing, amazing animals. And it is, you know, absurdity can be fun, but there's also a kind of absurdity that is sad. And you brought that up when you mentioned the lines about, you know, how humans tend to kill what they love. And, yeah, unfortunately, it is absurd that that happens. Just observe the tendency of humans to kill what they love most. Such a sadness. And I really liked his wordplay in this. You know, Shark Tank satire leaves no room to maneuver. Titanium bars replace tubular bells. I like how that speaks on a shark, actual literal Shark Tank, but it could also speak on the show Shark Tank, where we're always constant, where people are trying to sell an idea, and the thought that we're always trying to sell ideas or to each other. And a wonderful use of alliteration and wordplay. I like burlesque at its best, as within the title and on the line, and unshackled, never cockled, sometimes sarkless, mostly dressed to the nines. You know, the absurdity of life really does put on a show for us. Just a brilliant, clever write and very well done. And before we go on to the next one, I would like to mention that we are going to have carryovers, and that now Break On Through is an every other week show, because starting next week, we're going to have a dark show, Echoes in the Dark, which will be the Friday's opposite of Break On Through. So any carryovers we have will not be next week, but the week after. And make sure, of course, everyone, to check out all the contests and topic boards put out by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. All right. And with that being said, we have up next The Genome Meets Its Maker by Metermaid. And she also was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
The Genome Meets Its Maker by Mary Boren. Based on a quote by Albert Camus, he said, "The absurd is born of this confrontation between the human need and the unreasonable silence of the world." And the poem, "The father of humanity is forceful, infusing us with iron-fisted verve to strive beyond the stars and never swerve. Our mother is a mistress of decorum who tempers passion with inherent grace to those evolving at a slower pace. But children of the cosmos are impatient and radical. Like marbles from a bowl, there's utter chaos in the way we roll. Absurdity's the prime genetic marker that separates our species from the pack and obviates the dignity we lack.
Great read and write, Mary. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. I'm glad you were inspired. And Faisy, your thoughts?
I was a little bit sad that she changed that one word at the end because I was going to have a theory about it that I'm wrong. because in the writing it says, and thumbs it its nose at dignity and tact. And she said another word, obviates, which maybe means the same thing because I don't know, to hinder or stop something. Okay, no. I was thinking that that it's thumbing its nose in dignity is because, you know, our opposable thumb is one of those things that separates humans, but it also is our kind of arrogance and snottiness thinking we're the best. So to thumb our nose using our special thumb, looking down at things, you know, not necessarily going for the dignity intact that we should, we end up being separate from the other things. And is it a good thing because we have our opposable thumbs, or are we the problematic ones, perhaps, as we are set aside in different ways? If that's how it is, then I kind of wonder if the mother earlier has to do with, like, Mother Earth, because then it's the children of the cosmos who are impatient. So I don't think it's about specific people so much as it's about everything and everyone. Yeah, that's as far as my thought process has gone so far.
I like that, too, and I can definitely see that because, you know, as humans, we take for granted the gifts offered up to us. I mean, and we really do tend to thumb our noses at the rest of the world. And, you know, I always believe that no matter what your beliefs are, that, you know, we need to take care of the other people as much as possible, and especially we need to take care of the earth, and we need to take care of the animals, and yet we tend to have this attitude of looking down at things. So I like those observations there. And I like how, and to me, I feel like the father of humanity is forceful, does reflect a patriotic type God, and our mother is a mistress of decorum who tempers passion with inherent grace, does perhaps speak on Mother Nature, though it could also speak on, you know, the Catholic Mary, reference to Mary, but the mother. But I don't think so. I do get the impression of Mother Nature. And but children of the cosmos are impatient and radical. I really like these lines, like marbles from a bowl that's utter chaos in the way we roll. I mean, you know, there's such wonderful rhyme and flow throughout this poem, but those lines really grab my attention with their wordplay. And, you know, like you just can't help but, you know, think of that, like some sort of rock song or something with, yeah, that's how we roll. And, you know, completely chaotic without any sort of pattern or meaning, but also in the way we roll is a great reference to the guy who pushes the rock up and it just rolls back down, Sisyphus. Yeah, because Sisyphus, yes, that's it. And he is actually the adopted symbolist
symbol of absurdism, the idea of pushing the same rock up a hill over and over again just to each time have it roll back down. And so I really thought this was a great ride all the way through, but found those lines particularly clever. So very well done. And up next we have Seriously by S. Sharp. And Scott was nice enough also to supply us with a SoundCloud. And here we go.
Seriously, the world is absurdly absurd. But wait, I disagree with this premise. I have such disdain for my thoughts on this. I question everything, especially my purpose to espouse purpose, all purpose, in this poem, but I'm going to do it. Wait, that's absurd. One cannot encapsulate meaning, all meaning, or even the lack thereof in a single poem. But this poem is different. Hold on, not so fast. I have reason to believe, not good reason, or even reason founded in reasonable logic, that there is a reason for everything. And this poem may very well reveal it, absurd as that may sound. I want you to consider just for a moment the seriousness of everything. Seriously consider the potential that this poem has to reveal all the secrets of time and existence. Now that's just absurd. Seriously. Never mind.
Oh, great read and write, Scott. I really enjoyed the humor in this and how he wrote it in the voice of someone who's trying to convince people that there is a purpose to this poem, but also a purpose to life. I love the use of the word encapsulate. That's absurd. One cannot encapsulate meaning, all meaning, or even the lack thereof in a single poem. But this poem is different. And aren't there, you know, don't we all have those moments, I think, and there's people out there who always say, but my thought is different. My poem is different. My art is different. And, you know, I like how it gives thought to the idea that there's nothing new under the sun. And the sardonic voice he uses in this, I think, works really well for this particular topic. And I really like how, I don't know, there's just something in the way he used his voice to emphasize certain lines that I think just worked so well. Hold on, not so fast. I have reason to believe, not good reason, or even reason founded in reasonable logic, that there is reason for everything. You know, just wonderful lines all the way through, great humor and very well done. And Faisy, your thoughts?
I liked how meta it was, like talking about itself. It had that kind of feel of like Deadpool when he talks to the screen, or when in the comics he kind of like, instead of just like going on with what's happening, he will address the reader or the viewer and talk to them directly, which actually goes back way to like Shakespeare's time with the soliloquies. And it kind of, this feels like that, where it's self-aware. It starts to do a poem, and then he's like, well, actually, this is just a poem, so what am I going to do? He's talking to the reader directly, which is really fun, especially because he did it in his own voice. But I think it would be even more fun if he was, like, on stage. Like, I can just picture him, like, kind of sitting on the edge of the stage talking, and then he gets up, and he's at the microphone, and then he's like, nope. And then he's out in the audience, and, like, he seems like he would be back and forth here in some really fun ways. I can just picture him doing it in person. And, you know, it brings to mind the unreliable narrator of many postmodern books where they can't decide for themselves what is the truth. So how can they tell us the truth if they're torn within themselves about how it works? He disagrees with the premise of his own poem in the second line, and I really enjoy that.
I like that. Great comment there. And Deadpool and Shakespeare brought up in one sentence. Awesome. Very cool. And up next we have A Silhouette's Homesick by Ben Hart. And Faisy, would you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. A Silhouette's Homesick by Ben Hart. 1. Streetlight stroboscope. Snowfall. Maybe it's my wounded youth. Maybe it's moondust. Marble bruised by wolf's tongue, getting the words wrong to the love song at my funeral. A sad celebration of wrong times in right places. Maybe it's ticker tape. Love notes the dead wrote as a feeling in the wind, the unloved trapped with their snow globes. Maybe it's oblivion, a saturnine prism, a dysphoric principle, a silhouette's homesick, like rain to tide, like my mind to flotsam thoughts, what smoke left to become, one with the primal urge to run. Hunting every living being that still prays to be stolen by a freedom that still feels something and gets away with it. Maybe it's nothing, just a message that broke the bottle, a toothless eulogy to the heathen dream that was peace for humanity in the heaven they already had that already healed them. Snowfall tells the whole of human history in just a feeling. 2. Gods of War. We're all chain smokers with shot lungs, blaming the body that twists the limbs for being a poor pugilist against the throes of wants, against the lumps, the unhappy bumps that are killing us, as kindly as advertised. And no one bats an eye because it's accepted suicide. Health was right. Society designed us to die. Sorry, Heath was right. Society designed us to die. Down in the fourth round go the men of faith, peddlers of sensation, misanthrope apostles, upright animals hoping to be the very last cannibal dying of starvation. And no one cares when the Palestinians die. They didn't have the money to blackmail our minds. Were they supposed to give thanks to those who took their lands, who have so much blood on their hands that you could paint the whole walls red and then paint the streets with the rest, but the blue star pharaohs didn't need any help with that? God, please take your promise back. Stop this senseless bloodshed. 3. A prison break. Thoughts caught in amber rain, a single tear, a prison break. When hazel eyes bridge the divide to a beautiful blue mind, to steal the tomorrow from the tongue of the insomniac dreamer. You saw sorrow in my playing of She Loves Me Not. With overdoses, better to take it out on a bouquet of roses than to die for something real. Better to fight the feeling than to lose tomorrow to the dream. 4. Unnoticed. A river runs in place in circles from the sea to mourn the moment youth left unnoticed, alone, into the embrace of the harm that cast the final stone. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Faisy. And what a powerful write by Ben. As always, brilliant imagery and metaphors. I like how he speaks on the idea, or he writes on the idea of the absurdity of war and violence, especially war and violence committed in the name of a religion or a god. You know, so many great lines throughout. I really like, we're all chain smokers with shot lungs, blaming the body that twists the limbs for being poor pugilists against the throes of want, against the lumps, the unhappy bumps that are killing us as kindly as advertised. And I like how he, I think, blaming the body speaks on the idea of blaming the leaders, blaming the, you know, that which we follow, rather than learning to think for ourselves. Let's see here. I mean, so many great lines. And down in the fourth round go the men of faith, peddlers of sensation, misanthrope apostles, upright animals, hoping to be the very last cannibal dying of starvation. Makes you think of the phrase, the dog-eat-dog world, and how we're against competition against each other. But I thought the very last cannibal dying of starvation was a particularly dark but clever line in the idea of what we will do to survive and what we will do to make sure our sense of principles survives, even if it means that they become less than principles, if that makes sense. Wonderful lines, great write, and very well done. And your thoughts, Faisy?
I love Ben's writing. He has this way of like flowing from subject to subject in such beautiful metaphors and turns of phrase that it all feels so natural and yet surreal at the same time. He's really good at that. I like the line, marble bruised by a wolf's tongue. And then he says, love song at my funeral, and I'm pretty sure that's the title of one of his poems that he wrote last week. So this may also be connected to that poem. And I like the unloved trapped within their snow globes. There's that isolation feeling that you get. And the streetlight stroboscope is such a cool name for that section. That's really neat. Then in the second section, where am I now? The prison break. There's the fear there of missing out, I think. To steal tomorrow from the tongue of the insomniac dreamer. I really like that phrase. And you saw sorrow in my playing of She Loves Me Not with overdoses. Better to take it out on a bouquet of roses. So that's really scary of like taking the drugs, trying to get that dream of she loves me or she loves me not, trying to be in that moment, the drugs making you feel that way, and it would be safer to do the pedals where you pull it off, but that's not the path that it seems to be going. Then to lose tomorrow to the dream, and that's the thing, is when you're trying to live within that dream, when you're trying to be high and not experience the present, you risk not having the tomorrow. And I skipped a section. I did that. That was number three. So the number two part, pardon me, the gods of war, which for some reason I was thinking was the third part, is very intense. I mean, it starts off with that kind of personal violence to yourself, with smoking. I like when he calls it accepted suicide, because you are slowly killing yourself. I was in some kind of, I can't remember what it was. It was a therapist who was leading it, but it wasn't like my own therapy. It was a course about something. And they were saying that there's different levels of suicidal. You know, it's not all, I'm going to try to die right this second. There's a stage where you just stop caring if you live, and you're kind of slowly working towards it. So taking up smoking, eating unhealthy, just, you know, you stop doing the things to take care of yourself, and you start doing self-destructive things. Sometimes it's even like be in dangerous relationships. It's a different kind of suicidal that is not as, you know, obvious maybe, or shocking to people. And I like that he puts that there, because that's not one that's talked about very much. And then to get into the war and, you know, the horrors of what's happening there. And I think I like what you said, Pam, of like how it's, you know, the religion themselves, technically like the scriptures, for the most part, are anti-war. It's supposed to be take care of each other kind of thing. And yet organized religion takes it in different ways. And, the pain and the absurdity of people going against each other when that it only hurts everyone, and it's just awful. The upright animals, I like that he calls the humans that. All humans, I'm not saying particular side or anything, that upright animals is we are all the animals who are walking and feel superior to the other animals, but here we are, the very last cannibal dying of starvation because we've destroyed each other that we depended on each other. It's just interesting way that he words things, and his call for ending the bloodshed. It's a very dark and very relevant poem right now. He's very eloquent in his writing, and it definitely brings up emotions, and it makes you think.
It really does, absolutely. Those are wonderful observations there. And up next, we have Samsara by The Atlantic, and it goes like this. Again, 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 as if I am certain of the cycle and know of my rebirth to witness the snake eating its own tail, say, it honestly doesn't even taste that great. And quite frankly, after a while, you miss other things like trees, a crowding airport terminal, computer-created sounds, a cat purring in your ear as sleep approaches, anything human grounding us to this very real and non-consensual existence. People ponder the presence of aliens with little regard for the vastness of space, the obrus that rests in lockjaw somehow represents infinity, forever deep-throating the karmic past of generational trauma. I didn't ask for that, never craved nirvana, though later realized I'd spent years seeking it out, subconsciously synonymous with extinction, walking directionless over coals 10 fetters long to keep the fires burning. Maybe it's all in good fun and in good practice. The Eagle Scout in the corner of my mind says to be prepared, especially if it's for an eternal wandering, like an uncontrollable orbital moon dragged in rotations, forgetting You can always pull out a cartridge, blow into the bass, and hope it just restarts. End poem. And an amazing write by The Atlantic, who's a pretty new name to me, so I'm glad they were inspired. And I look forward to reading more of them in the future. And I hope they're inspired for other shows. And your thoughts, Faisy?
I really enjoyed this. At first, when I was talking about the snake eating its own tail, my mind kind of went to Jormungandr, which I'm saying totally wrong, which is the world serpent in Norse mythology, who, when it releases its tail, creates Ragnarok, which is basically the apocalypse, because it was the circle of life that was always continuing. And when it lets go of its tail, everything falls apart. You're no longer within that circle of life. I mean, it's more complicated than that, but that's where my mind went. But I'm into Norse stuff right now. But then if you think about it, when it talks later, it calls the snake the Auroboros, out again, saying it totally wrong, which is also used in Egyptian and I think Greek, a bunch of ancient cultures had that, and it was supposed to be that eternal cycle. There's destruction and there's rebirth, and it goes on and on. So it is something where you kind of expect it to keep going. The circle of life will continue, except is there like an uncontrollable orbit moon dragged in rotations, and it's you get stuck in a rut sometimes. Maybe you don't want to be on that same rotation all the time anymore. I liked non-consensual existence. That makes me think of in the Queen song where it says, "I don't want to die, but sometimes wish I was never born at all." Like, just like, did we ask to be put into this cycle here? Is that something that we're ready for? So non-consensual existence is an interesting concept. And then the end amused me because it the blow in the thing. So what I picture here is the N64, Nintendo 64 games, or even the old Sega games. They used to have like this kind of like hole where it fit together that would get really dusty. And even though it said in the instructions and on the box and on the thing, do not blow in this, we all did. It was like it was like everyone I know, whenever it wasn't working, you pull out the cartridge and you blow on it and you put it back in and then it works. That's just how it was. Like more modern games, it's more like, did you turn it off and on again? You got to turn off your console, you got to reset it, do the thing. But when it says that, pull out a cartridge, blow in the base and hope it restarts, that's what I think. It's we're going against the instructions. We're not doing it the way we're supposed to, but maybe that will reset us in a better way. Now, I actually don't know if that's what they're referring to, but when I saw that, I just immediately thought of my friends playing N64, blowing in that cartridge, trying to make the game work again. So maybe trying to make life work again by breaking the rules.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. I found that end part very amusing, too, and very relatable. But wonderful comment there. Yeah, I really like this. Clever, right, thought-provoking, brilliant imagery and metaphors throughout, and so many clever lines. I really like where it says, people ponder the presence of aliens with little regard to the vastness of space. The Oberus that rests in Lockjaw somehow represents infinity, forever deep-throating the karmic past of generational trauma. I didn't ask for that, never craved nirvana. And I like how that speaks on the idea of, you know, the things we didn't want to have to deal with. And the idea of the life we never asked for. Really powerful line. Very well done. And our last rite for the night, and the rest will be carryovers for 2 weeks from now, is From the Absurd to the Ridiculous by Mary Dark. And would you give that a read for us, please, Faisy?
From the Absurd to the Ridiculous by Mary Dark. In any context, when seeking a word to explain any premise, become quite absurd. As in stating the obvious, it's hard to explain why going over the same nonsense again and again. What's that you say? It's like shooting at birds, to extract an exact meaning when searching for words. Should one simply use Google or even spell check? The results are the same, like any shipwreck. When one sues for peace at the point of a gun, the contradiction is evident and cannot be shunned. It's like putting up an umbrella in 410 hurricane or wearing a t-shirt walking out in the rain. The absurdities simply mount up like never before, the long and the short, the rich and the poor. Some abstractions, distractions that were very thin. More is less, less is more. It's a true mess we're in. We could go round in circles by stating the fact. When you've got a small itch, isn't it better to scratch? Or taking coals to Newcastle, if that don't beat it all. Or if the world is a disc on four pachyderms and not a round ball. Well, we could go on like this until kingdom come. And that's another thing. Does the world end as a whimper to some? Or did the Big Bang happen when the Almighty clapped? Who were they applauding? Or was it just more claptrap? These are the questions that burn a big hole, like where do we go when life's taken its toll? And is heaven up in the clouds among all the vapor? Like the Bible itself, it's all down on paper. And last but not least, saving the best for last, how does grass grow and rabbits go fast? With a hop, skip, and a jump, and a tweedledee-dee, we're stuck right in the middle of more absurdity.
Great right there, or read there, Faisy. I really enjoyed this wonderful rhyme and flow, smile-inducing lines. It makes me think of the idea of the questions that we ask in order to make sense of life. And it especially near the end makes me think of the kind of questions you'd hear from kids, like, you know, how does grass grow and rabbits go fast? I thought that was wonderful lines. I really also like, or taking coals to Newcastle if they don't beat all, or if the world is a disc on four pachyderms and not a round ball. And I like how that speaks on the idea how there's different creation stories and how we try to make sense of the mythology and the balance between mythology and reality. Just an amazing rite and very well done. And your thoughts, Faisy?
I had to giggle with the should one simply use Google, because one of the elders who is teaching me today said, you know, my generation, we'd ask our grandpas. And he's like, but unfortunately, the next generation doesn't have a lot of grandpas because of the way things went with this. And he's like, but they do have Grandpa Google, so they can get some answers. But... Which, just the casual way he said it, they do have Grandpa Google. And then at the end, he was like, don't forget to ask Grandpa Google to fill in the gaps. But
it was cute.
So when I saw Google, I was where my mind went. I thought this was kind of like an Alice in Wonderland kind of feeling, because, Tweedledee and Tweedledum, but it just the end with the questions, like you said, it's things that a kid would ask, and I actually love answering those reference questions. It's like my jam when someone comes up with something like that, and I'm like, let's find out together. But I like the way it kind of mixes the different philosophies. Like, the Big Bang and creationism could be combined, where he clapped, and that was the Big Bang, and then all these things happened. I know some people will probably be offended by it, but like the Bible itself, it's all down on paper. I thought that was a clever line, and it works nice with the rhyme of the vapor. This is really playfully done, but asks big questions, and I think that works nicely for the contest. It makes you think. It's philosophical, but it's done in such a whimsical kind of way that it fits with the absurd.
It really does. Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And great show tonight. Thank you, Faizy, for calling in and hanging out with me the whole time. Thank you, Naomi, for calling in. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, was listening while we are on live, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night.